I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with regulatory attorney Angie Matney of the law firm Reed Smith. We're going to be discussing the New York Health Information Privacy Act. The state legislature recently passed the law and it awaits the signature of New York State's governor. So, Angie, I understand that the New York Health Information Privacy Act, if signed into law, would limit the sale and processing of health information. The law prohibits regulated entities from selling regulated health information to third parties and would also limit the processing of health information by regulated entities. So, what does this mean? What is considered regulated health information under this law, and who is considered a regulated entity?
So, as we've seen in the time since the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision in 2022, any number of states have passed or considered passing privacy laws specifically related to health information. And this one in particular does have really broad scope in terms of the defined terms. So you mentioned regulated health information. That is a very broadly defined term, and it's any information that's reasonably linkable to an individual or a device that's, and here's the key part, collected or processed in connection with the physical or mental health of an individual. And then we've got a couple of specific call outs in that definition, referring to location information and payment information, as well as any inference that's drawn about an individual's mental or physical health. And this is especially broad again, because even other health-specific privacy laws talk about information that identifies or the controller uses to identify someone's health status. But here we have information that's collected or processed in connection with someone's health. And it's not entirely clear what that encompasses, but it's clearly a broad bucket of information. Could include things like, your purchase history or even notifications that you might make if you're, say, dining at your favorite restaurant and you let them know that you have an allergy to a particular ingredient, things like that. Additionally, there are fewer exemptions than we typically see in these types of laws. And a big one is that this law does not expressly exempt employment related information. So, information that could be on a job application or information that you might need a disability accommodation or things like that, not exempt from coverage under this law. And that, this broad definition, together with the lack of exemptions, impacts the type of entities that are regulated. And so, briefly, there are sort of three prongs to this definition of quote unquote regulated entity. And that's going to be an entity that controls the process of the regulated information of a New York resident, an entity that controls the processing of the information of someone who's physically present in New York, whether or not they're a resident. And finally, an entity that's located in New York that controls the processing of regulated health information. And that means, wherever the consumers are located, if the company's in New York, then arguably anything connected to anyone's health is within scope. So again, very, very broad coverage.
So when it comes to the selling of this regulated information to third parties and the processing of this health information, what does that all boil down to? What are some examples of what would kind of fall under this?
Sure. So, yeah, you mentioned a prohibition on selling. The way the statute is drafted, I think there may be a bit of an open question as to whether there's an all-out prohibition on selling, which we'll talk about what that is in just a second, even if a consumer otherwise would consent to that selling, or if maybe you could do it if you got the right type of authorization in place. So that's a little bit of it's not super clear at this point, I think, and it will be important to see if there's any guidance from the Attorney General if this is enacted as it currently is drafted. So what's a sale of information for purposes of this law? It's essentially any exchange of regulated health information for monetary or other valuable consideration. So it's not limited to just what you might think of as a traditional sale of information or selling or renting a database. It's anything where the entity gains some benefit for disclosure of that information. So a big example would be using advertising cookies on your website and participating in targeted advertising and stuff that generally could be considered a sale for purposes of any number of privacy laws, even in situations where money isn't tied to it. There's an exception in this New York law for sort of some corporate restructuring activities, but otherwise these things are defined as a sale. And again, they either are entirely prohibited, or maybe if you go through an onerous authorization process, you might be able to do it, but guidance from the Attorney General will be helpful to interpret that. I will say that many laws do allow consumers to opt in to certain activities that would be considered sales, but it's not clear that this law would allow that. And then outside of the sale of information, there are restrictions on processing. So you either have to be processing regulated health information as strictly necessary for a few specified purposes, like maintaining a service that the consumer has specifically requested, or certain internal business purposes. And by the way, there are limitations on what those are. Marketing and advertising don't count, for example. And some other things like detecting and responding to security incidents or fraud or, certain legal activities. But if you're not processing the regulated health information as strictly necessary for these purposes, then you must obtain from each individual an authorization. And that authorization has to make certain disclosures about the type of data you're going to process, the nature and purpose of your processing, and what you're going to do with all of that data. And there are any other number of items that do need to be included in that authorization. It has to be signed, that can be an electronic signature, by the way, by the consumer. It has to expire no more than 1 year after it's signed. And obtaining the authorizations requires the regulated entity to wait at least 24 hours from the time that the person requests to use one of the entity's services. So there's like this built-in 24-hour waiting period before the regulated entity can seek an authorization. So, the concern is it's going to pose some operational challenges to companies in many industries. And again, regulated entities here are not just traditional healthcare related entities. They really do are involved in many industries. Those companies could conceivably be regulated by this law.
So how would a company in an industry outside of healthcare, how would they even know if they must comply to this with this law if it becomes signed by the governor? And what would they need to do to comply?
That is an excellent question, and it's hard to sometimes it's going to be hard to pin down, but at the end of the day, if you process any information that is even tangentially related to health status or to a health condition, and you are located in New York, or you have a contractor that's processing your data in New York, or again, have some kind of nexus with the state of New York, then you may be subject to this law. And again, there's no size thresholds or anything like that. So I think a lot of companies may not initially know that they are subject to it. Now, a number of companies, when the Washington My Health, My Data Act went into effect, did analyses to determine if they're subject to that law. And the thing is that because of the breadth of the definition of regulated information under this New York law, and because of the lack of some traditional exemptions that including those some of the ones found in the Washington state law, companies that did that analysis and said, "Oh, well, I'm not subject to the Washington law or the similar law in Nevada or whatever," may still be subject to this New York law. I think one group that has not traditionally had to worry too much about these might be HR departments in many different companies, because again, employment data has traditionally been not in scope for some of these laws. But here, arguably, things like FMLA requests or other things like that would be in scope. So it's going to be difficult to know sometimes, but if you're doing any kind of processing that pertains to health or arguably, wellness, you have a wellness app and that app is processing data that is quote unquote in connection with health. You just really need to engage in that analysis because you may have obligations under this law.
So, Angie, you mentioned the Washington State My Health, My Data law. You mentioned a law in Nevada. How does this New York Health Information Privacy Law, if it, indeed is signed into law, compare with those other states and what they've been doing with their health information privacy laws? Is this more restrictive? Is it, raising the bar on, the various requirements that would kind of fall under this whole handling of health information and what kind of falls under that definition?
I mean, there are definitely some similarities between this law and the laws in other states. Like at a very broad level, all of them are trying to regulate health-related information that has traditionally not been subject to regulations like HIPAA or, laws and regulations like HIPAA. But and so they what they at a broad level do is try to regulate that information. They give consumers rights in that information to access or delete that information and so forth, and require the businesses to take certain steps to protect that information. But where this law differs is that it will regulate categories of information that have expressly been exempt from. Let's just take the Washington law as an example. The Washington law does exempt that employment information that we discussed. It exempts certain financial information that is regulated under the federal Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, so certain payment information. And the reason it's exempt under that Washington law is because it's deemed that the existing framework is protecting that data. New York doesn't have that exemption in this bill. So you've got those types of exemptions that are not there, including, there's no express exemption for publicly available data. So what all this will add up to is, again, more entities than may have been prepared to comply will be subject to the law, and it's also going to be very operationally challenging. And going back to that notion of the prohibition of sale, that is again a distinction from the Washington law, where a consumer can consent to a sale, even if the process may be difficult. But if the law is interpreted such that sales are entirely prohibited, that essentially would mean, no targeted advertising, potentially, no activities that could be deemed as, somehow giving the entity a benefit for anything that is even tangentially related to health. So I do feel like it's going to present some operational challenges because, in certain ways, the scope is broader than that under the Washington law.
So, Angie, you mentioned HIPAA. How does this New York Health Information Privacy Bill fit in with HIPAA and, for instance, the Federal Trade Commission and their health breach notification rule?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first, with respect to HIPAA, there are some HIPAA-related exemptions in this bill, but again, they are less than we have seen in laws enacted in the past few years. There is usually in a state privacy law, you will see two types of exemptions broadly. You'll have entity-level exemptions and information. Exemptions. So with the New York law, we've got an information exemption for protected health information collected by a covered entity or business associate regulated by HIPAA. But then there is an entity level exemption, but it's only for covered entities, not business associates. So, and it says that there's an exemption for a covered entity to the extent it handles quote unquote patient information, which is not defined in this iteration of the law, in the same way that it handles protected health information. So the scope of that exemption is narrow. There was a similar exemption in the very first version of the California Consumer Privacy Act a number of years ago, but this language, among other things, led to amendments to the CCPA to try to help clarify what was meant by some of these terms and the scope of some of these exemptions. Another interesting piece related to HIPAA is that while the New York law contains a definition of de-identified information, that definition does not expressly reference the HIPAA de-identification standard. And it also requires certain commitments and actions that HIPAA doesn't necessarily require. So, for example, an entity that's processing de-identified information is required to publicly commit to only process that information in a de-identified state. So entities that do deal with information that's been de-identified under HIPAA will need to assess whether or not they need to make any additional disclosures about how they use that. And there's also requirements that if you contractually agree to share or disclose that de-identified information with another party, then you must obtain a contractual commitment for that party to also honor these de-identification restrictions. So, there's some HIPAA exemptions, but not as robust as we see in certain other laws, including the Washington law. And as far as the FTC's breach notification law, there's not a related exemption in this New York law. So, an entity that is subject to that, it may also have obligations under this New York law and likely would, right? Because essentially, the main focus of that FTC breach notification law are going to be consumer-facing apps and entities that help facilitate data exchange with those. And so those kind of entities will need to assess their obligations under both of those frameworks.
So, Angie, what are the potential penalties or violations of this law?
So under this New York law, the potential penalties are that for a single violation, the attorney general can enforce the law, and there can be a civil penalty of up to $15,000 or 20% of the revenue obtained from New York consumers during the past year, whichever is greater. There's also, I guess, sort of an open question as to the whether or not there would be a private right of action available under the law so that, individuals and can bring litigation to enforce it. This is expressly part of the Washington law, for example, but the New York law does not expressly authorize a private right of action, but it doesn't necessarily preclude one either based on how it's written. And then, it's just a measure, a comparison. The civil penalties under the Washington law are around 7,500 per violation. So, whereas the New York law, again, is the greater of 15,000 or 20% of the revenue obtained from New York consumers. So, definitely a potential for significant penalties for violations.
And finally, what is the likelihood that this will get signed into law by the governor of New York? And could it still potentially be changed before that might happen?
There's definitely a potential for it to be changed, and it's hard to kind of quantify the likelihood of it being signed either as is or, with some additional edits. But either way, whatever happens here, I think this is a really important and significant window into how different regulators and legislatures are considering the issue of consumer health data, particularly at the state level, and the recognition that HIPAA, because of its nexus with the health insurance industry, has not regulated a lot of health-related data, and the recognition that consumers are looking for some sort of assurance that this data will be treated in a way that recognizes the sensitivity of that information.
Well, thank you so much, Angie. I've been speaking to Angie Matney, I'm Marianne Kolbasak-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.